Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Dr. Andy Ang, the research scientist, Wildlife Reserves Singapore Conservation Fund chairperson, also the Raffles Banded Langer Working Group head, and president of the Jane Goodall Institute here in Singapore. Also, Tonio Dempsey of the Nature Society, and Siva Soti, also known as Otterman. We've had him on many times before, intimately involved in what's happening in the environment. Welcome to all of you today to Weekend Mornings.
Don't all say hello at once. Okay, now we're going to be professional here. This is a very sort of, you know, multiple interview CNN style setup. So we will probably say your name after each question. And maybe to kick things off, Mr. Siva Soti, or Otterman. Yes, I mean, this week, development in Singapore will be done in a more sensitive way, hopefully, thanks to the sweeping changes made under the existing Environmental Impact Assessment Framework, the EIA framework, which I know all three of you have been involved with over the years. So maybe Siva first, just give us an overview of what this means for future development and for Singapore biodiversity.
Well, you know, in the past, as a lot of land use was converted through developments, there wasn't always a consultation. The degree of consultation escalated this past decade. And most famously, of course, with the Cross Island Line. And in these engagements, we realized that there are differing standards. There are issues that are not taken into account for which are characteristic of a Singapore environment. And the procedures adopted can be quite variable. So it actually was very, very frustrating. There are a lot of late night meetings going through hundreds of slides. And we have to be really focused after a long day of work and then to point out issues and to get into very detailed discussions. So these have been going on for many years. And as more engagement happened and we visit with different developers, we realize, wow, the scenario is so completely different. And in one case, we are at a level one discussion. In another case, we're in a level five discussion. And it was quite a hot mess. So we really had to be paying very close attention. It's good because there's a group of us to go. And then amongst a lot of us, usually the critical issues can get pointed out, but the manner in which the response can vary as well. So standardization of guidelines, the desire to train developers into fundamentals, which then they know how to address, is all really very welcome. So we're actually very pleased about the announcement.
Can you give us a practical example, maybe one, just call out one particular thing that has changed or that will aid in the development process going forward?
Maybe Tony could do that, because I know Tony was involved with this process.
Great. Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, well, we've been heavily involved in a number of projects. The most controversial one was the Cross Island Line. And in this project, we were engaged at a very early stage. And that turned out to be of critical importance. Because when you get engaged at the early stage, you can bring to the table concerns that might be too late if you bring them later, too late to deal with. So I think LTA did a great job of managing the engagement from the start of that Cross Island Line project all the way through to where we are now. We're not finished yet, but you know we're very satisfied that LTA was able to listen to us and react to the concerns that we had raised.
And what were some of those concerns, Tony, and what was the response?
Well, there are several parts to it. The first part is that most of us in the nature community were concerned that we had this line running across the nature reserve. What could possibly go wrong, right? So an environmental impact study was commissioned, and it went through, and along the way there were various engineering considerations that were looked into, ending up with the line being very deep. The alignment, the vertical alignment, is underneath the bedrock. And that was a very specific and expensive mitigation that meant that, you know, the impact up on the surface is very small. But then you have the second part of the issue is, what about the terminal ends? How do you get the tunnel boring machine into the ground, and how you get it out of the ground, and where do you do that? And that became a major issue, because, you know, these sites where the TBM, tunnel boring machine, was going to be inserted and taken out, were right in in adjacency to sensitive areas like Windsor Nature Park and another site over on the other side of the PIE. So, you know, there was a fair bit of concern there because, you know, when in these adjacent areas, you have spillover of fauna. I mean, any animal that you find in Windsor Nature Park, you can find adjacent to it. Ruffles banded lunga, slow loras, colugo, flying squirrels, all sorts of snakes. So, you know, the concern there was about these terminations. And then through these deliberations, through the engagement, through the studies, it was there were some pretty critical changes made to how those terminal points were going to work. I can't give too much details on that here, but there were some major concessions given by LTA regarding how those terminal points were going to be implemented.
Yeah, that's a great example. Happy. Yeah, that's a great example, Tony. Thanks for bringing that up because I think that's a real world example that people want to know about. And Andy Ng, as you look at this news that's come up now, of course you are intimately involved with the banded langur and many other animals. What does this say to you? Are you more hopeful than you were a couple of weeks ago about the future of our green spaces in Singapore?
Yeah, so I agree with Siva and Tony that these are great improvements and great moves in terms of assessing the impacts on, you know, biodiversity before developments happen. So this change in terms of earlier engagement with nature communities and other stakeholders, it's a welcome move because the earlier you can be involved, there's more lead time before development where you can assess the kinds of habitats that are in the area, what animals or plants might be affected by the development. So then there can be more effort put in place in order to minimize the impacts or even avoid those impacts. So I think, you know, one of the great moves is this earlier engagement with stakeholders.
And that early engagement is critical, isn't it? Coming back to you, Siva. And also, I think perhaps the perception of the forest and what it represents to Singapore has changed. How you classify the forest, its value to the Singapore. It's not just an environmental luxury, if you like, but also an economic one as well. I mean, the way we view forest, that has changed. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, and also the forest has changed. So the land use classification began very early, right? So when we went independent, we took settlements out of the forest. Then these are land banks. So the needs of Singapore, economic needs, residential needs, will then dictate how the land gets used. So there's a concept plan, but approaching development, then there's a discussion. So what may be described as a secondary forest, which is a rather unfortunate term, in the 30, 40 years since, may be actually quite valuable. So I'm walking along Mandai Road after the storm wiped out about 70,000 trees, right? Yeah. And I'm on a PCN, you know, and I see a movement and it turns out to be, you know, Andy's banded leaf monkey. So excitedly, I email her and I say, my God, they're using a forest patch that we never considered they would be using. But then if you think about it, 30 or 40 years have passed and secondary forests can be quite productive. So, you know, all these buffer parks and parks is setting up, they are adjacent to nature reserve. But it doesn't mean they're not valuable. They're actually very valuable. There's a lot of feeding going on. So this is what Tony means by the fact that past the boundary, if there's reasonable forest cover, the animals are actually using it. Now, in the past, if a development came in and took out 10-20% of a state land patch, the degree of alarm would not be so high. But then now those remaining patches are in very low quantities. So if you come in and take a proportion of land, the significance is now extremely high. So then what we do during stakeholder meetings, we ask two questions first. First thing is, how much of original forest can you keep? Because that's great for carbon emission conservation. It will also be able to be a refuge for the animals that are already there. And then the very important thing is, how is this connected to the adjacent property?
Yes.
Because if you're in between and you wipe it out, there was one meeting in which we said, look, can't you just keep a narrow passage because we know pangolins are using the area and we know straw-headed bulbuls are flying through the area. These are globally endangered species which, because we hardly have poaching in Singapore, they found a refuge. Mm. So strikingly, in our very small populations are very valuable. But here we are having a meeting with the developer to say, look, can you keep this stretch? And then we'll try and show you how. So what Andy is saying, if the discussion happens very late in the day, the developer is reluctant to make a change because he's just discovering all these things which seem so important. But if it's early in the day, then connectivity and refugia and conservation of carbon emission all can be built into a project.
And Tony, Stephen makes a good point there about the adjacent land, which is often overlooked. So if you have a developer move into a certain area, and I believe this is where some of the new framework will help, meeting up with you guys early on and raising the awareness of the adjacent land, the neighbouring land. So even if a developer comes in and follows all the environmental guidelines, follows the framework in place, there must be an understanding, I believe, of the adjacent land because, you know, green corridors obviously overlap and you have to take into account what goes onto the land next to the development. I think Tenga Town is a good example of that where, you know, they catered for a forest corridor around the town of Tenga, but wasn't necessarily of where was what was happening a little further down with, I think, an HDB built-to-order thing. So you have to be aware of the adjacent land, which I believe means communicating with you guys much earlier on in the process, Tony.
Yes, it's not just about adjacency. It's also about connectivity, as you pointed out. We have these reservoirs of biodiversity in various places in Singapore, not only the Central Catchment Nature Reserve, but also the Western Catchment, the live firing area to the west, and also to the south we have the Southern Ridges, and to the east we have Changi and Puloob and et cetera. So, you know, we're concerned about the connectivity between these, the ability of, you know, for example, the straw-headed bulbul to travel or move its gene pool from one to the other and back again. Bats, very important, particularly the flying mammals and birds. We have all of these forest patches around Singapore, particularly through Bukit Batok, not just Tenga, but also Bukit Batok Hillside Park and others. We also have the rail corridor, and we have Bukit Batok Nature Park, Toh Tuck Forest. There's a whole list of these little patches of forest everywhere, and they all have ended up, after all the development that we've had, as forming these corridors. And now with development pressure, we find that some of these are under development plans. Our concern is that we must keep the connectivity. Mm. Okay, so we accept that we must develop. Okay, we have certain social and economic existential needs for the country to develop, and we accept that, and we accept that we are going to lose some of these habitats. But what we very much concerned about is that while we can develop these habitats, we want to maintain the connectivity corridors. So when we engage with the various government agencies that are undertaking these developments, or even private developers, which is less so, but they're still there, we will be talking about connectivity, and we'll be asking for proper treatment of the connectivity, not just that it be there, but that what habitat is there is maintained in its original form for the portion of the corridor.
Yeah, we're talking
That's
with,
very important.
Thanks. We're talking with Tony O'Dempsey of the Nature Society, also Sivasoti Otterman of NUS, and Dr. Andy Ang, research scientist, Wildlife Reserves Singapore Conservation Fund chairperson. And Andy, I'll go to you. We just got a note in from one of our viewers on Facebook Live, Angel Sada, who said, I think over the past decade, Singapore has actually quite a major progress in preserving its natural heritage, despite the ever-present pressure for development. As you are out and about, are you seeing that kind of good news story for the flora and fauna around Singapore?
Yes, I would say that in general, there is a positive trend in terms of recognizing the importance and value of our natural heritage and putting a lot of efforts from various individuals, agencies to preserve it. I just feel that there could be more to be done, because like Siva mentioned earlier, some of these secondary forests or, you know, habitats that might seem degraded are actually important places for our native biodiversity. So if we can actually protect and restore those habitats and connect those fragmented habitats, I think it's crucial moving forward. So, you know, planting trees with the MParks 1 million tree movement, I think it's fantastic. It's just that we also have to look beyond just planting trees, because they are only trees that, you know, need time for an ecosystem to be in place. Whereas our intact forest has existing ecosystems that support the various fauna and flora. So planting trees are fantastic, but it should be together with the mindset that we need to protect existing forests and
habitats. Andy, do you feel like that point is sometimes missed? Because as you rightly point out, that Million Trees initiative is fantastic. I think there are 60 or 70,000 trees into it. And that is certainly a very good thing. But it's just not the same as having the established forest, like you say, with the ecosystem already there.
Because sometimes I think over the years, when we engage with agencies during developments, one of those mitigations that are usually, you know, suggested is that, okay, so if we're going to remove a patch of the forest, we would plant some trees elsewhere to restore habitats right. after development. Mm. But is it the same? Mm. And also, I think one thing to point out is that while there is this improved EIA framework about early engagement and also transparency of the reports, we also need to look into after development effectiveness of the mitigations. Because I think right now, that's what's lacking. We assess the impact on biodiversity before development, we monitor the impacts during development, but after development, everybody's happy.
Just jump in, Andy. That's a fascinating point. What do you mean by that? That we have a long-term relationship with the developer to ensure that they're consistently following guidelines, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So I think it doesn't need to stop when the development stops. Because, you know, if we put in measures such as road bridges or, you know, some traffic calming measures, we want to minimize road queues, right? So are road queue numbers going down? Is it effective? Because if we know that these methods are effective, they can be implemented in future projects. But if we don't assess the effectiveness of those measures and we are just blindly using it because it seems like a good measure, it can never actually improve, you know, in terms of the habitat.
Okay. Well, it's a step forward, and as Siva rightly points out, this report will now be publicly accessible, which is a good thing. Maybe just going around the table here, because we've got to be mindful of the time. It's a step in the right direction, starting with Siva. If there was one more thing that you would like to see improved down the line, starting with Siva and then Tony and Andy, what would it be? Siva first.
I think we'll all agree that it would be independent reporting mechanisms. So now the developer hires the EIA company that does report, and the report is actually a property of the company. And then for the people who do the environmental monitoring, it's also within the company. So that can obviously be improved.
And Tony?
Yeah, I think that we need to increase the scope of some of the EIA studies so that landscape issues are considered as part of the environmental assessment. Currently, it's, you know, more silo. We're just studying the actual project area. But we should be looking also beyond the project area to consider the connectivity issues.
Yeah. And Andy, I'll leave you to last because you recently took me out to see the lovely langurs where I saw two dusky langurs. It was one of the highlights of my life, all thanks to you. What should we do next, Andy?
I think that, you know, in terms of understanding our biodiversity and natural heritage, it should start even before development plans are in place. So it's important moving forward to identify some of those habitats that we might not know much about, but could be potentially very important, even before developers engage nature groups to say, okay, let's do an assessment of, you know, what biodiversity exists in the area. So if we can all come together to identify, you know, in Singapore, where are the habitats that we don't know much about, that probably need some surveys, and we go in there, collect the data, and when development, you know, plans are in place, we can already present some kind of a comprehensive assessment of what's there. Because time constraints are usually, you know, the issue when development happens. You only have a certain short period of time to do assessment.
We are very encouraged by these new changes made to the environmental impact assessment framework. We hope certainly that they will be go a long way toward helping us maintain our ecological diversity and also the green space that we all hold so dear here in Singapore. Thanks to Dr. Andy Ang, research scientist at the Wildlife Reserve Singapore Conservation Fund, chairperson Tony O'Dempsey of the Nature Society, and Siva Soti of NUS. Much appreciate all of you coming on. We hope to have you on again, of course, in the future to further discuss this and other topics. Thanks to you all.
Thanks very much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.